Our next case this morning is number 063914, Stallings against the United States. Martin.
Good morning. The government either concedes or does not contest five issues relevant to today's determination. First, that Mr. Stallings preserved his Booker claim at sentencing. Second, that failure to raise Booker on direct appeal constitutes deficient performance on the part of appellate counsel. Third, that if Mr. Stallings' sentence is even 1 month longer than Judge Steele would have otherwise imposed, that constitutes prejudice to Mr. Stallings. Fourth, that it cannot definitively say whether Judge Steele would have imposed the same sentence had he properly understood the guidelines to be advisory. And fifth, that a full remand would have been ordered if Booker had been raised on direct appeal. This leaves open only two questions for the court to answer today. The first being, how certain do we have to be that Judge Steele's error in sentencing Mr. Stallings under the mandatory guidelines was prejudicial to Mr. Stallings? And the second being, what is the appropriate remedy?
Well, we're talking about an 8-month difference here. That is correct.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And if the judge said, appropriate was the word he used, the sentence he opposed was appropriate, why at this stage of the case, 4 years after the sentence was imposed, do we not feel some comfort in that the judge would impose that same sentence?
Judge Evans,
ordering a Palladino remand and sending it back to the district court?
Because under the standards articulated by this court, both for the prejudice prong of a Strickland analysis and for the error analysis on Booker analysis, that is simply not the law of this circuit. Calling the sentence appropriate, this court has deemed to be insufficient to show harmlessness of error. I would direct the court's attention to the Graves case, where the court called the sentence appropriately a heavy one, and this court remanded anyway. The standard that this court should use to analyze prejudice in this case is the Strickland standard of reasonable probability, and this court has interpreted that to mean that there only need be more than a negligible chance of prejudice to Mr. Stallings. You add to that the Booker element, which in this case, as the government admits, would have been analyzed under a harmless error standard. The government would have borne the burden of proving harmlessness on direct appeal. So if you put those two together, all that needs to be demonstrated is a more than negligible chance that the government would not have been able to meet its burden of proving harmlessness. I submit that it would not have been able to because Judge Steele gave multiple indicia that he was bound by the guidelines, and indeed an error is not harmless if it affected the judge's choice in sentence, as this court held in the Schleifer case. The indicia that the guidelines did affect Judge Steele's choice of sentence, first, he gave the lowest sentence available to him under the guidelines. Second, he explicitly acknowledged that he could not go outside of the guidelines for Mr. Stallings' medical condition because the guidelines constrained him. Third, he stated that under the law, he had to impose a certain at least minimum sentence. And fourth, when he declared the sentence, he stated that he was imposing it pursuant to the Sentencing Reform Act of 1984, indeed the act that enacted the guidelines. And I would also note that in his opinion denying Mr. Stallings' relief on his 2255 petition, Judge Steele himself stated that if Booker had been timely raised on direct appeal, it seemed that Mr. Stallings would have been entitled to a remand in that case. The district court, having called the sentence appropriate, it's a very ambiguous term. I would submit that in the context in which it was used, he was stating that it was appropriate to give a guideline sentence in a mandatory guidelines regime because it was, he called it appropriate directly after sentencing counsel raising that Blakely was under consideration by the Supreme Court. And I would also remind the court that the entire point of the remedies articulated in Schleifer and Palladino is to kill the guesswork associated with these types of analyses, trying to get into the district court's head and see what it would have done had it been informed that the guidelines were advisory in nature. Because Judge Still made no definitive statement confirming that he would have imposed the same sentence had he understood the guidelines to be advisory, or had he understood them to be advisory, there exists much more than a negligible chance that Mr. Stallings suffered prejudice from appellate counsel's failure, which brings us to the question of the appropriate remedy. The remedy on direct appeal would have been a full remand for plenary review of the sentence, and the government concedes as much. There's no principled basis to alter or limit it here. The certificate of appealability is not jurisdictional in nature. It's not a reason to limit it. It can be amended by this panel. The law of this circuit is that this panel presumptively knows more about the issues of this case and is better equipped to articulate.
Well, but a full remand is a lot more cumbersome than a Palladino remand, isn't it?
I would submit that it's less cumbersome if the...
Oh, we have full resentencing. Where is this fellow serving a sentence?
I'm sorry?
Where is he serving his sentence?
He just got returned to Illinois. He had been in the medical facility in Rochester, Minnesota for quite some time.
So he has to be brought back into court. On a Palladino remand, he doesn't have to be brought back in. The judge simply takes another look at it and says, I would impose the same sentence, and if that's the case, we review it and either affirm it or reverse it for a full remand. But if the judge says, yeah, you know, on second thought, maybe I'll give this fellow 180 months instead of 188, then we send it back and the judge imposes that without bringing the defendant back. So there's a big difference between a full remand and a Palladino remand as far as the mechanics of working it out.
I understand that there is a mechanical difference at the district court level and also having to do with the defendant. I suppose I was thinking in terms of the mechanics at this court, that it is more cumbersome to have to send it back to the district court. If they say, oh, I want to redo it, then you have to send the case in full back there because you had previously retained jurisdiction.
We never mind doing things the hard way. We like to make it easier for the district court.
Okay, I understand that, Your Honor. I see no basis in law to say that the interests of judicial economy weigh against giving Mr. Stallings the remedy that he would have been entitled to had he his appellate counsel properly raised this issue on direct appeal. The government makes this sort of undeveloped argument that this court has broad discretion in habeas cases. It doesn't explain why a full remand would not serve to remedy the constitutional harm that has been affected here, which is what the remedy is supposed to be tailored to in habeas cases. And moreover, I would note that the case that it cites in favor of its notion that this court has broad discretion, that court ordered a new trial. So that certainly is not a call to limitation. The constitutional harm affected in this case was failure, denial of constitutionally sound sentencing, and I submit that the appropriate remedy in this case is full remand for plenary review of the sentence, and I would like to reserve the remainder of my time.
Thank you, Ms. Martin. We'll hear now from Ms. Morrissey.
Thank you, Your Honors. Good morning. May it please the Court. I think it's important that the sentence imposed by Judge Steele here did not violate the Sixth Amendment. There was no judicial fact-finding that occurred here that led to the guideline range. In other words, there were no upward adjustments applicable to Mr. Stalling that the judge found without a jury determination. The question is, did the judge believe he was bound by a mandatory guideline regime? And I don't think...
Well, he clearly thought he was, wasn't he?
Well,
there's just no question that he thought that 188 was as low as he could go.
I think there's some ambiguity in what he said.
Well,
you know, he said the appropriate.
See.
He talked about the minimum sentence, and I think that could be as easily construed as being the 180-month sentence as it is the 188-month guideline sentence. In any event, Your Honors, if this court is not satisfied with respect to whether the judge believed he was acting under mandatory guidelines or not, then the issue becomes what is the appropriate remedy. And I think, as the court notes, Palladino here to me seems to be the appropriate remedy that would protect the defendant's constitutional rights.
And I agree with you, that would be the appropriate remedy. And appropriate, which is the word we're grappling with here. You know,
right.
It seems to me that the district judge thought it was appropriate under the circumstances, and he seemed to be constrained. I mean, he thought he was under the guideline regime, and certainly we can look at appropriate as being ambiguous. And, you know, to give the defendant the benefit of the doubt, even though we're talking about, you know, in our lives, this amount of time may not be that significant, but it is significant to a defendant.
Absolutely. You know? And I think that's appropriate, Judge. Under Glover...
Don't use appropriate. We can't use that word.
Right. But under Glover, you know, there clearly, whether the judge, an eight-month difference is a difference. Whether the judge would make a difference of one or eight, that could be significant to Mr. Stallings. And the government does not argue with that idea. I did want to say that why I think Palladino is more appropriate, and I think this will be the first time this court has decided this issue in a habeas situation, but in this case, I think it's important to note that Mr. Mack, the district court counsel, the trial counsel for Mr. Stallings, argued for the guideline sentence. He argued that was the right sentence under the circumstances of the case. He did not specifically object to the mandatory application of the guidelines. So I think this case is more akin to the Palladino line of cases than it would be the Schliffer cases, Your Honors. And unless there are any more questions, I have nothing further. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Morrissey. How much time does Ms. Martin have? Thank you.
Two things briefly, Your Honor. When Judge Steele was imposing Mr. Stallings' sentence, he stated that he was going to impose the sentence and afterward give counsel the opportunity to say why that sentence should not be imposed. It was at that time that Mr. Mack raised the issue of Blakely being under consideration by the Supreme Court. I would submit that that's, under the law of the circuit, sufficient to put everyone in the room on notice that the nature of the objection was mandatory application of the guidelines. Second, just to clarify what Judge Steele said in his 2255 opinion, that had Booker properly been raised on direct appeal, Mr. Stallings, and I quote, may have been entitled to a remand to determine what sentence the court would have given had it known that the guidelines were merely advisory. I submit that is further indicia that Judge Steele is bound by the guidelines and warrants a remand in this case. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Martin. Ms. Martin, you serve by appointment of the court, and we thank you and thank your law firm for having taken this case on and for your fine efforts on behalf of your client.
Pleasure's mine. Thank you.
Our thanks to both counsel in the case, and the case will be taken under advisement.